Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Marvin Smith, cannot be with us today as he's making a positive difference in the life of one young man. As usual, each week we will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, with each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are all working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. And we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, I want to tell everybody, I am very excited to have our guest today. In fact, I believe this may be the third time, maybe the fourth time we've had him on. And the reason that I do that is that I feel that not only does he bring in great information for all of you, but I'm always lifted up today. So, you know, with that said, our guest today, Peter Boxa, is a nationally recognized author, journalist, and master life coach. He has traveled the world collecting scientific research and life experiences that lead to the development of a model that illustrates how humans manifest their reality. Now, he is sharing his insights to help others discover how they can begin to hone in on their desires, set an intention, and declare a set of behaviors that are in alignment, and then detach from the intention and allow the same energy that creates worlds from nothingness to help organize and attract all the needed ingredients to allow the desire to manifest. Now, through his books, workshops, and seminars, Peter's expertise helps people transform their relationships, their careers, their finances, their health, and even their appearance by helping them harness the energy of the universe and live the life they desire. Now, Peter's books include The Point of Power, It's None of My Business What You Think of Me, Think Yourself Young, and his latest edition, Faith Wave. Peter, welcome back to Answers for the Family.
Hello, Alan. It's great to be back.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you. And as I was thinking about it and thinking about your seminars, please let me know if you have one on the West Coast. I would love to be there. I'd love to attend. I think that not only getting this information out to all of our listeners, but I feel like I can always gain something every time we speak.
Well, it's very nice, Alan, and it's always great to talk to you. You're a like-minded human, and I love what you're doing with your shows, and certainly look forward to working with you in the future, so I appreciate you.
All right. Well, let's go right into the new book. What inspired you to write Faith Wave?
Well, as you know, I've always been fascinated by the idea of being a human and, you know, why some of us are lucky, why some of us live lives of success and abundance and filled with love, and others seem to just struggle over and over, repeating the same patterns throughout their lives and not really, able to get their head above water. Some of them even committing suicide. I was very curious about, how do humans manifest their lives? And are we unequal at some level? Some of us are born luckily. How does it actually work? And so my books basically revolve around the science of manifestation. In other words, how do we manifest our existence? Why are you a successful radio host and involved in another other joint ventures and such. And other people, you know, they get up and they're couch potatoes. What is the difference? And some of us, you know, will say it's nurture. Others will say it's nature, what's in our DNA. And I thought, well, let's just figure out what is the secret here? Why? How can we, if we so please, we're pleased to manifest a directed desire, how do we do it? And so Faith Wave is the culmination of all my books. I basically use quantum mechanics and physiology and biology to explain the processes, neuroscience especially, the processes by which our thoughts actually do become our reality.
Now you and you've done this also in your other books, where you really draw a connection between faith and science. Share with us a little bit about, you know, that connection, and because that's one of the things that I see that is something that is very unique, very powerful, and very different about your books as opposed to others I've read.
Right. Well, I mean, having been an academic, I couldn't just, you know, ask people to have blind faith in me. I know other books do. I know that religion asks you to have blind faith, but as an academic, I have to follow certain rules, especially if I'm going to publish my work. So I was really looking for a method by which I could ground my research in such a way that I closed the gap to the point where you're taking a very little step in terms of faith, actually. I use quantum mechanics. I use brainwave theory. I look at neuroscience, and I explain the way the brain works and how we actually connect with what some people call a God or the universe. I'm not a religious person. I was raised Lutheran, and I do believe that the ancient religious texts were here for a reason. They were teaching us how to be productive humans. The theories and the rituals that I found going back during my literary research, I went back 5,000 years looking at ancient religions, all the way through Christianity and Islam The messages were very similar. I looked for common denominators. I looked for rituals that they all talked about. Now, they were, of course, in different languages. They were from different geographic regions. But they all seemed to say similar things. So I actually created a spreadsheet of all the commonalities of all the religions. I wasn't looking for who was right and who was wrong. I was just looking for what were the common denominators. What were they all suggesting were truths? And so those truths, an example might be, Alan, would be prayer. Prayers, being Western culture, that's one of the most common rituals. If you go into Buddhism, you hear about meditation, and there's chanting, and there's various forms, of course, in different languages and different approaches. But basically, they all revolved around the same neuroscientific ritual, and that was to quiet the mind, silence the brain, and to go into closer into what I call a faith wave, which is essentially a specific type of brain that can be measured on an electroencephalogram. And I talk about in specific what that brain wave is. My research and my theories are backed up by the research of Richard Davidson over at the University of Wisconsin. He's been measuring brain waves for some 30 years, and even did some work with the Dalai Lama and his students. And that research is what I use as a foundation for my theory. And that is that as these monks, and I did live at the Lama Temple for some time with the monks. I did interviews with them, and it was amazing how their rituals correlated with neuroscience. Basically, they were creating new neural pathways that allowed them to silence their mind. So when they did create an intention, going back to my technology of intend, declare, detach that you talked about, in order to set an intention, if you have a desire and you want to set an intention, in order for you to communicate to what all these religious texts refer to as a God, I refer to it as the zero point field, and I deal with that in my book. And again, these are not my theories. These are the most contemporary view of the universe that you can find on Earth. It's the work of Stephen Hawking, Brian Fenneman, Max Planck, Albert Einstein. All these guys kind of agreed, but we couldn't really prove it because, you know, we're dealing with something that is not really tangible, and that is our consciousness. Our consciousness is measured in terms of a brainwave, and this is related to the research over at University of Wisconsin with Richard Davidson. Our consciousness, to define that for your listeners, is your view of the world. Now, as you have a thought is an electrical impulse. That's all it is. It's electrical impulse. You might speak German. You might speak English. You might speak Portuguese. It's all an electrical impulse. It all can be equated to a specific brainwave. Now, when you speak of praying to a god or meditating or chanting, you are essentially converting a thought into a brainwave. And it is not. You're not when you're speaking to God. And I don't want to offend anyone, but you're not speaking in English. You know, the God that's out there doesn't speak English. He doesn't speak Portuguese. He does not speak Spanish. He or it responds to a specific brainwave, and that's if you think about evolution and the way that works, it ties in very well. If you look at the biology and how we've evolved as humans, it's all related to our thinking. So as you think of thought, there are people with low frequency brainwaves. There are people with high frequency brainwaves. The difference is the lower the brainwave, the less data. So people mm-hmm. with very low frequency brainwaves. I know we've talked about this before, Alan. We've discussed how you meet some people, and they have a very difficult time manifesting anything. A lot of them end up in the street and committing suicide. They're not able to manifest a desire, so they tend to stay stuck, and that becomes a fairly difficult human experience. So the way that you can tell a person with a low frequency brainwave is they tend to have a victim mentality. Now, have you had people in your work where you've been able to correlate where someone their place in life, whether they were addicted to a drug or they were incarcerated or they were struggling with their finances? Have you ever noticed that oftentimes they have a victim mentality? Have you seen that correlation in your work, Alan?
Absolutely. And it's actually one of the things that is quite sad sometimes, because you will start working with them and you're going from your own perception, and you know, my own perception then at that point being, you know, if you can just, you know, say it's drug addiction, you know, if you can just, you know, stay off of these drugs, you know, I know that you're going to be able to have such a clearer, more positive view. And then what you find out is that, you know, they go off to a program, they get off the drugs, and it's something else. And you know, so if there's not people there to continue to help work with them, sometimes they fall right back into the same thing, be it drugs or be it some other thing leaves them as sort of a victim. They're allowing whatever is going on out there to control them, rather than them really taking the initiative and moving forward and saying, I'm not going to be this victim. I'm going to move forward and I'm going to make decisions on my own.
Right. And what I found as well in doing casework is that oftentimes with the same person that you are trying to help, your level of consciousness is much higher, you know, given your education and your vocation and your background. You're coming to the table. This person's right in front of you, and you're giving them the right answers. This is like a test that you can absolutely pass. I mean, I'm sure you're working with someone, you're looking at, from your consciousness, you're like, what? Don't you see what it's doing to your body? Don't you see what it's doing to your life? And you're looking at it, and for you, it's as obvious as the day is bright, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sun's going to rise, and there's going to be sundown at the end of the day. It's going to be dark at night. Well, for that other individual who has a lower frequency brainwave, they can't see it. They can't even see it. Have you ever been in a situation, whether you know, romantically or in a friendship situation or a business situation, where you know you're sitting down and you're doing your absolute best to communicate with the other person a reasonable outcome, a fair outcome, something that where both parties can win, seeking a win-win situation? Mm-hmm. I know that's your reality type, but have you ever been in that situation? Talking and you cannot get anywhere. You're just stuck because the other person doesn't see you as someone helping them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think you bring up a great point. And, you know, all we need to do is look to what's going on in the world right now, where we have countries that are trying to sit down and discuss things that you would think would be a win-win situation, and yet we cannot seem to get them to see what's going on the other side. I mean, share with us, you know, how we can harness that power. How can we get that to work, but on a bigger scale, considering what's going on in our lives right now all over the world?
Well, it's very interesting you bring that up, because that is, I talk about that in great detail in my first book, The Point of Power. What you're referring to is mass consciousness. Mm-hmm. Each of us as an individual, we create our own lives based on the manifestation process or the lack thereof. So as we are evolving, you know, as our consciousness individually increases, and it can be measured using electroencephalograph. So I'm not asking you to have blind faith in what I'm saying here. It can actually be measured. When they measured the Dalai Lama, he was firing off the charts. This is a man who is, his consciousness, his awareness, his view of the world is very different than yours and mine. You know, and if you look at historic figures like Jesus Christ, where they were able to actually touch someone with a deadly disease and not be affected by it. There's a lot of, let's call it conditional documentation or evidence that suggests that you actually can make yourself superhuman on some levels. And I believe that it is through our consciousness that we can actually become superhuman. I think that as you increase your consciousness, your brainwave frequency increases, you are a loving person, you're a compassionate person, you are humble, you are grateful. Those are a reflection. They are essentially a symptom of your consciousness. Conversely, if you are a fear-based person, if you are in fact in ego, when you're in ego, you tend to look at the world as an enemy. Someone's going to take something away from me, and then I'm not going to have it. And you know, the reality is, we are spirit having human experiences. Now, most of us think we're humans potentially having a spiritual experience. Now, that's a big difference in terms of the way that you look at the world, your consciousness. As spirit, we are essentially immortal. We're immortal. We are energy, and as we come into this body, we are here to evolve as a spirit. Now, as we individually evolve, as you and I have this conversation, and maybe somebody listening goes, holy cow, you know, open, humble, and, you know, I always thought of people like that as weak. Well, those are some of the strongest people you'll find on the face of the earth, people that are humble and open and gracious and loving and compassionate. Those are great people. Those are strong people. The media, on the other hand, suggests that, you know, it's a cold-hearted, you know, murderer that is a great man, potentially. He shows no emotion. Well, I mean, that's problematic, because that's not, that person is typically a traumatized individual who shut off his feelings so he can, you know, do something like beat somebody up or hurt them. So our media is really working in the opposite direction of our positive evolution, and that goes way back even to what's going on with our diets, and I can go on for hours on that, how it's frustrating for me to see what's happening. How the money is basically, corporate America is creating almost a de-evolution of the human here in this country, which will, again, it'll be temporary. These are all in cycles, and when you brought into a play the concept of what's going on, say, in Gaza or in the Ukraine, and you have parties that are just bumping their heads, and they're willing to kill other humans in order to gain something like land or control, well, that is the opposite of being open, humble, and gracious and thankful. That's kind of, you know, you're on my land, get off. And if you don't get off, I'm going to kill you. And that level of consciousness, great leaders of great countries, you know, including our own, have used that similar caveman tactic. There's, you know, and I think of, you know, you look at our politicians and our leaders, and you think, well, these are great men, educated men, evolved men, and then yet we walk into someone else's country and we literally use brute force in order to manipulate their behavior in some capacity, get them to do what we want them to do. Well, I don't see any difference between that and what a drugged out, homeless person that comes up to you and shoves a gun in your ribs and says, you know, you have a choice, either give me your money or I'm going to shoot you. You know, that's, to me, that's not a very conscious perspective. And unfortunately, our individual consciousness does add up or average out to be our something called mass consciousness. And so the good news is we are very different. We're a very different society, a very different human population than we were 1,000 or 500 years ago. When you look back at the tactics of the Romans and the tactics, you know, of many of the medieval societies, you know, where torture, open public torture was common, and then you look at how we're actually arguing about things like putting someone to death. I mean, regardless of where you are in the equation, if you're alive in the year 2014, you are a more evolved and more conscious person. There's a low level and there's a higher level, but basically, as a culture, our mass consciousness represents a higher average in terms of our consciousness and where we're at. And then, of course, there's people like you on the radio trying to reach out and even help others to increase their consciousness. So all of this working together is quite powerful. And the thing I want to point out about the book Faith Wave is Faith Wave does not tell you in any way that you should not believe in religion or it's it's probably one of the most revolutionary books on the topic, and that it unifies all religions. It basically says, because the basis of the research was religion. I basically took a lot of the things that they were telling us. I said, well, what are these things are important, like prayer? Why is prayer important? Why is meditation important? Well, people, we are evolving scientifically, exponentially, and people are meditating all over the world, and they're getting a sense of the value of meditation. Well, why, I asked. You know, there's nobody else telling you that. Why does meditation work? Why does it? What are the physiological impacts of meditation, of prayer, of chanting? And I can tell you, we cover them in the book. It is amazing how something as simple as taking 15 minutes a day and meditating changes your reality, changes your existence on Earth. And I mean, I can't speak to the topic more emphatically. I mean, I've been meditating for about 4 or 5 years, and I can tell you that the changes in terms of my health and my ability to manifest what I want have been tenfold. So there's tools out there for us to be using that are not yet publicly accepted, and that's unfortunate.
Well, and I agree, and I too meditate. But one of the things that I wanted to touch on as we talk about sort of our spiritual journey, there's a statement that you make in, and it's either in one of the books or in one of your speaking engagements, but where you say that you know my interest is being the absolute best I can be and to live the most complex, fulfilling life I can muster in the 143 years that you'll be in this body. Now, the reason that interests me so much is that I get asked questions at times from people who talk about, you know, how long do you think you're going to live and so on. And I never like to put an ending number on it. So I've always said, well, I'll see 140 and we'll see what happens then. Tell me your reasoning for 143 being that number.
Well, my third book is Think Yourself Young, and one of the lessons that I learned when I was living with the monks is they were able to turn back or even stop or reverse the aging process, and they were doing that using specific rituals. I studied their diet, and in that book, I really talk about the power, the effect of your thinking on your actual health, your physiology, and in fact, I would suggest that manifesting change in your body is the absolute easiest manifestation that you're going to be able to initiate. And I interviewed Arnold Schwarzenegger years ago, and he used visualization techniques and many mind-based techniques to essentially change the way that his body worked. So over a period of 5 to 6 weeks, he would look at the biceps, he'd look at the abdomen, and he would actually visualize what he wanted to look like, and then he would, you know, the body would create it. And I personally tried many different things in terms of healing, and I've interviewed several people that have actually healed themselves using chanting techniques and things like that. Which it's very difficult for me to even, you know, put them in my books because I can't, to this day can't prove that the directed meditation actually caused the cancer to be cured. However, I've interviewed several people where that's actually occurred. So it seems like we're onto something here as a culture, and I think what we're onto is probably one of the most powerful evolutionary areas of research and understanding that we're going to come across. I think it's going to change the way societies exist over the long haul.
Well, we are talking with Peter Boxa. The book is called Faith Wave. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere. 1 minute, 15 seconds, we will be back, and we will continue to talk about the things that you can do to help manifest the things that you want in your body.
Founded over 25 years ago, to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And you're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking with Peter Botza in regards to FaithWave, his newest book. And for any of you, if you're sitting at your computer and if you want to follow along, because we're talking about a variety of things as it relates to manifesting the things that you want in your life, if you go to Peter's website, www.peterbaksa.com, you can follow along with us. So as we talk about different things or even different books, you can follow along with us. Obviously, if you're driving, don't try this. But for those of you sitting at your computer, you can easily open up another window and follow along with some of the things that Peter's talking about. Now, Peter, in FaithWave, you have a chapter on miracles. So in your definition, what exactly is a miracle, and why do you think it occurs?
Well, miracles, I wanted to speak in terms of miracles because they're a cornerstone in many religions. I was interested in how they occur. Are they a manifestation, or, is there some sort of angel that comes down that creates a life transaction? The reality, I believe in a miracle is something that we actually have a very large part in when it occurs. And if you read the chapter on miracles, I go through many examples of how humans, through their thinking, wherever it was derived, actually there was sufficient evidence to suggest that they were causal in creating the miracle to occur. Now, that ties in very directly with the concept of FaithWave. The technology that I came up with to explain how we can manifest anything, all your readers out there, your listeners out there, if there's something that you really want, let's say you're looking for love, you'd like love in your life, you'd like to increase your bank balances, you'd like to change your body in some way, if you need to lose weight or you need to gain weight, I'm going to take you through the technology, and it's very basic, and you're going to hear it, and you're going to go, this is almost too simple. But it really is. It was designed for humans to be doing back 1,000 years ago, before we knew what quantum physics was, before we knew what physiology and biology, before those words were even in existence. So this was a tool that was given to us by our creator, by the creator, that allows us to manifest change. And if there's something in your life that you want to change, I suggest you listen and give it a shot, and you'll be the proof, because this works like crazy for me. I can tell you, it's an incredibly powerful technology. The first step is you've got to quiet your mind. Now, Alan, I don't know about you, but I know you meditate now. Do you remember before you meditated how difficult it was for you to actually quiet your mind and have what in Zen Buddhism is called a clear, where you've got no thoughts? You remember that?
Absolutely.
And how long did it take you to get to where you were able to quiet your mind and actually perform a meditation?
It probably took me about, 6 or 8 months, to where I'd keep having some form of distraction. I would think that I'm getting close, and I would think that, okay, I think I've, and then something else comes up and something else jumps in and I would fall out. So I think it really.
Right. Well, you're not alone. You're not alone, Alan. I mean, that's human nature. And so when you've got books like The Secret, and you've got books that basically are telling you how to manifest, you want a red bike. you think about a red bike, the red bike appears in your garage. Unfortunately, that is not the way it works. In fact, it doesn't work. And so those of you that have tried that, please don't put my research in the same boat as that, because I can tell you right now why it works and why it won't work. And one of the things, you have to set the intention on a quiet mind. And one of the interesting exercises that I noticed when I was interviewing a Tibetan monk, his name was Erda Jonsi. He was a third-generation Tibetan monk, 23 years old. And I was just really interested in hearing why anyone would want to be a monk if you're 23 years old. I was like, this is real. You know what I mean? And so, but he was a very, very intelligent young man. And I asked him, one of the questions was, how many hours a day or how many minutes a day do you spend meditating? And he said, I don't know. So I cross-examined him. I tried to get the answer. I said, I don't know. And as I was asking him the questions, I noticed in between interview questions, he was looking down at his mala beads and did every time he wasn't engaged in a life transaction, an interchange, he was meditating. And that's why he couldn't answer the question. So the meditation process actually creates new neural pathways. It's almost like you're doing curls for your bicep. As you quiet your mind, you're changing your brain at that very moment. And so the idea behind quieting the mind, if you are sending to the universe the zero point field or to the God that you believe in, you're sending that out six or seven different messages, like, oh, I wonder if I wonder if I turned off the dishwasher in the kitchen before I left, or the faucet, or did I, you know, I'm wondering how little Johnny is doing. And you're thinking about all these things, and you're, gosh, I got a stomach ache. I really should have showered earlier. I mean, you've got all these thoughts going on in the universe while you're trying to pray or meditate or send out an intention to the universe. Now, most of us are like that. Most of us, you set an intention, you ask for help during a crisis. That's when you're doing that, you're probably thinking of your health, you're thinking of the situation, you're thinking of the consequences if you don't get help. And so those typically don't result in a miracle occurring, and nor do they result in a manifestation occurring, because the key is to clarify the message that you're sending out into the zero-point field. The message is coming in the form of an electrical impulse called a thought. The thought can be viewed on an electroencephalograph as a wave. Mm-hmm. So that's called a brainwave. So this all ties into brainwave theory. As you communicate, when you're communicating with people, you're not only speaking in terms of thoughts, I mean, in terms of vocabulary and words, it's body language, and there's a third element, and that is your energy. You're constantly communicating that. Now, you're not only just communicating that to other humans, you're communicating that out into the universe, into something called the zero-point field, and the zero-point field is actually responding to you. And this is all a reflection of a thought, and the thought comes in the form of is based in your consciousness. Consciousness is the way that you look at the universe. So Albert Einstein once said the most important decision that we humans have is whether we live in a hostile universe or a friendly universe. The minute you make that decision, you set your life. You set your life, your next life transaction, because if you think it's a hostile universe, what are you going to be doing? You're going to be walking around in fear. Fear is a thought. Fear is a specific brainwave. Fear is a specific brainwave that you're putting out. You're communicating it to other people. You're communicating it out to the universe. And what happens to fearful people, generally? You know, what happens if you go out into the woods and there's a fox that has been injured and he's scared to death because he can't run away, and you come up and try to feed him? Uh-huh. What does he do? He bites you.
That's right.
Right? Well, humans are no different. It's like, I'm sure you see this in your work. You're trying to help a guy who's addicted to drugs, and he's about to die, and you're reaching up to the fox that's injured. And what does he do? He's not necessarily nice to you sometimes, right, Alan? They don't come out and say, thanks, Alan, so much for trying to help me, you know, get healthy and not ruin my life any further, right? There's oftentimes you deal with someone who is not only not thankful, but you tell me.
And they're hostile in that moment. Now the beauty of it is, and based on the training that we have for what we do, is that we recognize that may be that reaction at that moment. But if we continue to come from a place of love, we will hear from them later. You know, many of them, and which is why we do what we do. There becomes a transformation because our focus continues to be, we're here for your care and welfare. Well, we're just here for your care and welfare.
In my language, what you're doing is you're altering their brainwave pattern. You're changing you're changing what they're putting out in the universe. When they're being hostile, they're being hostile because they're afraid. They're afraid you're going to take something away from them. They're afraid you're going to take away their drug. And that's a huge concern for someone that basically their entire life revolves around it, right?
Yep.
I mean, if someone said, I'm going to take away your son, I know you've got a great family, so you probably wouldn't go, oh, yeah, come on in. Here's the keys, you can get the other one. I mean, you're going to react hostile. You might use physical or violence, right?
Right.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, there's no, in the drug addict's mindset, you are taking away their son. You're taking away the most important thing to them. So, again, to get this back to the manifestation process, when you go into a manifestation, you can't have thoughts of fear. You can't have thoughts of, I want. It can't be a cleanness. It can't be like, gosh, I wish, you know, no one's ever given me anything, give me something. It's got to be, not only do I deserve it, it's already arrived, it's happening. It's competent. It's from a loving, self-loving perspective. It's from a thick, full, healthy consciousness. As you put that thought out there and you say, you know, this is my desire. This is what I want to become manifest. And it is in alignment with something positive. And this is another strange thing that if you ask for things that are not in alignment with your best interest, you're going to lose the battle again.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people manifest lives and are very successful within the context of that one area of their life. Like, for instance, how many people do you know that have made a lot of money and are just, like, ridiculously unhappy people?
Miserable, yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, who's that guy that was on news the other day? He owned the sports team? And, you know, what was his name? Help me out.
Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling, right? I watched the man. I don't know this guy from Adam, right? I mean, but I'm watching him on the news in his interview. I thought the worst possible thing that man could possibly do to try to protect himself is to speak, because he was just this miserable human being. I was like, oh my gosh, you are not helping yourself, right? He was basically telling people exactly how he thought. How he thought was his consciousness, the way that he looked at race, the way that he looked at himself, the way that he looked at other people. You know, that was a very wealthy man, you know, that in my eyes is probably one of the most unhappy people that I've ever seen, especially in the public eye. So the point behind what I'm saying here is that just because you can manifest something, it doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily be happy. In fact, oftentimes you manifest things. In fact, all the time when you ask of the universe for a manifestation, like you want to bring love into your life, how many times have you or someone you know been alone, you're like, God, I'm lonely, I eat my meals alone, I sleep alone, I want a partner, right? So you send out a desire into the space, you put yourself in an inventory-rich environment, before you know it, you got a girlfriend, you got a boyfriend, right? And you're thinking, great, I'm no longer alone, I love it. But you know what that manifestation brings? It brings a mirror that looks, you got to look right at. And that mirror starts to tell you, you know, that you need to learn some things in order to maintain love in your life. You need to know how to communicate. You need to know how to be compassionate. You need to know how to be loving, humble, gracious. And all of a sudden, you're like, well, I can't do any of those things. So what happens? The love vibrates right out of your life. So the process of manifestation isn't what we think it is. When we're in ego, especially in Western culture, and we think, gosh, I wish I could get a bigger house. I wish I could have more money. If only that person would change. If only I had a bigger bank account, then I would. That's a mistake that's been ingrained to us through the media. And I can tell you right now, as you begin, if you read my books, and you begin to follow the technology, you are going to become an expert manifester very quickly. This is not difficult. It was designed for cavemen. It worked for cavemen. It's going to work for you. However, remember, as you become an expert at it, what happens is, you know, the old adage, you know, careful what you wish for, you might get it. Well, that's what happens. And I can tell you from personal experience, manifesting for me has become fairly rote. If it's something that I'm really passionate about, I want, you know, I'm able to manifest the creation of the five books that I've written here recently. Those are manifestations when I bought and sold businesses, and I built businesses from the ground up. These are manifestations of based on many years of research and how I do it and all that good stuff and a lot of work. But those are all manifestations. What I found was, with each manifestation came 50 life lessons, 50 challenges that I had to either, I either had to work through and resolve and raise my consciousness in order to maintain a vibration or a frequency of thought that would allow me to maintain that asset or that new manifestation, or it vibrated right out of my life. And the same thing happens in relationships. You know, you can bring love into your life, and you bring this amazing woman into your life, and she's loving, she's kind, and you're not. You know what happens? She's gone.
That's right.
And you're like, what happened? But the reality is, it's all science. It's basically, that's how your brainwaves become your reality. That's how your thoughts become your reality. If you go into life situation and you're fearful, what happens? I mean, I doubt you're going to win. You know, I doubt you're going to go into a business transaction or a life situation when you're scared to death and make that situation work. However, if you come in open, you come in humble, listening, you come in aware, you come in thankful for what you've received to date, and you're like, well, this is just another blessing. If you go in with that attitude, your chances of success are way up there. Conversely, go in with ego, and we go in with fear, and those people are the enemy, and I'm going to have to beat them in order to get what I want. Even if you win that one life transaction, I can assure you that the next life transaction, the direction you're going, and similar to Mr. Sterling, you're not going to be happy. You're not going to get to where you want. And these were some of the things. And I'm sure, you know, I'm not sure what your religious background was, having been raised Lutheran. Many of the things were, you know, just be honest. Be a good kid. Treat other people the way. These were just, you know, we call them the golden rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, those things are not wrong. You know, unfortunately, we're giving up on religion, you know, and because we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Religion is human. It's human created. You know, I'm sure there's some messages within the context of it, the principles. But the principles are good principles. They're things that you can actually build on. Of course, that we didn't know, you know, quantum physics. We didn't know science. We didn't know that our thoughts were actually a way of communicating. But those are facts. Now, the type of thought that we put out, that's what the essence of it is. The symptom is the life situation.
Yeah, and one of the things, and when we spoke, I think the first time, I ended up getting a visual, and either because you used it or I just received it, but a visual that has stuck with me is when you talk about creating paths. I got a visual of snowboarding, and think about snowboarding on your brain. That if you continue to go down the same particular path with your snowboard, with your board, it creates a path. It creates a groove in there, and then I think that we end up kind of going down those same ones by habit. And if we're focused on fear, or if we're focused on negativity, we're going to stay in that path. But again, through the meditation, to be able to create new paths and continue to go down them, I think the more that we go down them, the greater that we establish that new groove, and then that new groove that we have continues to take us to a better place. So that's kind of a visual
analogy.
Yeah, and
yeah, I might suggest that what you're referring to is paving new neural pathways.
Yes, exactly.
As you get on your board and you head down, you kind of head down, and with whatever thought process, whether it's fear based or it's love or it's gracious, as you jump onto the hill and you begin heading down, you're basically, to some degree, you're going to repeat the same pattern as you did before, because you're going down the same neural pathway. You're going to respond to life situations as you go. We'll call them bogles, I think they're called in skiing. Whatever they are, you're going to probably respond the same way as you did the last 50 times. However, if you jump on the board in a different spot, from a different place of consciousness, you're going to be running down that hill in a completely different way. And so the analogy applies, and I can't tell you, your thoughts become your reality. And so as you begin to set an intention, you know, quiet your mind, where you're coming from is crucial. If you're coming from an angry mind, if you're coming from a selfish mind, a fearful mind, you know, you're probably not going to end up where you want to be. Conversely, if your consciousness is one of compassion and love and forgiveness and being humble and open, your chances of success in most life situations is going to be greatly increased, and along with the manifestation process, you're going to be paving the way to a much more abundant, complex life. If you can take those precepts and apply them, and think about someone that comes into life, every life situation, wanting to fight somebody, right? You know, we both know people like that, right? Like, every single interchange is like, well, you know, you're wrong and I'm right. And that's ego. And that person's going to live a rough life. Maybe he's going to end up in jail. Maybe he won't. But if that's that, if a lot of people like to blame others for their place in life. And the fact is, it's our thinking. It's the way that we look at things that is at the foundation of our reality.
Right. Now, we have a instant message coming through. And again, I want to thank everybody that sends in either emails, instant messages, or calls. This one reads, my company sponsored an intuitive intelligence workshop, which has definitely helped our sales group in their relationship with clients. This same consultant is also working with local police departments, helping officers learn to develop their sensory perceptions using a consciousness-based version of controlled remote viewing. The detectives claim their crime-solving abilities have dramatically increased. Does CRV or intuition play a role in your book and your work?
Yeah, there's no question that what we're talking about is opening the door to your intuition. I don't know about you, but I oftentimes ignore my intuition. If I look back in my life, you know, when I've been in business deals and I felt something, intuition to go one direction, and my brain basically said, no, we're going to go this way instead. So I feared losing something, and I was, intuition was really giving me a key to, you know, a different path. And so we are talking about intuition. And one thing, we can talk a little bit about intuition in terms of why some people don't have it. I think that intuition is something that we all have access to, but oftentimes, our intuition is blocked based on the thought that we're having prior to, you know, looking to get in connection with our intuition, and that comes from trauma. If you, a lot of people, I'm sure that you deal with, have had traumas in their life that continue to affect them into the future. Well, their ability to connect with their intuitive mind is very it's weakened to the point where it's not accessible. Meditation,
boy, I was
and prayer,
say, why,
are all pathways.
Yeah, why is that? Why is trauma blocking someone's intuition?
Well, one of the things, as you have a trauma, for instance, let's say you lose a loved one at an early age. Well, that is a form of abandonment. Abandonment tends to create fear. Fear creates a specific type of thought. That thought is a brainwave. So the brainwave that you're putting out for pretty much the rest of your life, you know, unfortunately, I hate to tell you this, but that trauma that happened to you when you were 4 or 5 years old, you're going to be feeling that when you're 60. And certainly there are ways to, you know, I know that you can talk about how there are ways on how to deal with that. But what I'm going to talk about is the effect of that is that you're no longer listening to your intuition. You're not putting a thought out. You're not reacting to what's in front of you. You are reacting to something that happened to you many years ago. And so that disconnect causes that traumatized person to stumble through life rather than, as you said, with the snowboard, skiing through life. I mean, it's a completely different path because you're dealing off of, you're not dealing with truth. You're not dealing off of reality. You're dealing from a projected form of reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I just glanced over at the clock, and I cannot believe that we are out of time. It seems like this, we've been on for about 15 minutes. It's actually been 50. Peter, thank you so much for coming on. And again, for anybody, if you want to look into Peter's books, besides the fact that they're in most bookstores, you can go to Peter Baksa.com. That's PeterBaksa.com. Peter, again, thank you so much for coming on. And for anybody out there, again, I've read, you know, all of the prior books. They are wonderful. They have helped me. I know that they will help you. Peter, do stay in touch. Keep us posted on what you're doing. And when you're out here in Southern California, let us know. I'd love to get together.
Thanks, Alan. Always great talking to you. We'll speak again soon.
Great. And for everybody out there, have a wonderful week. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and be good humans. Good day.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.